So this is quite a journey that you've been on dealing with your mom. When did this kind of manifest itself in your family?
Well, my mom showed symptoms of mental illness when I was growing up as a child, but she functioned well enough that we didn't realize there was a serious issue there until I was a young teenager. I was about 14, was when she had her first full psychotic break. And from that point on, was really, you know, in and out of hospitals and on medication and kind of going through that cycle that's pretty common for people with serious mental illness like schizophrenia, like she had.
And kind of coupling up with that, then your dad was unemployed as well and then underemployed. Talk a little bit about kind of adding, you know, stress on top of stress for your family.
Yeah, when I was 13, my family moved from a rural area where we had lived. My dad had served as a pastor of a small church. We moved to an urban area, actually right into the city, which was a big change, obviously, for our family. And we were experiencing some culture shock and some just a different kind of pace of life and making those adjustments. And as you mentioned, my dad was unemployed for a long time at that point, and then really for a long time kind of underemployed. That same year, my oldest sibling, my brother, graduated from high school and left home. So it was just a lot of adjustment, a lot of stress happening all at once. My parents' marriage was strained at that point as well. So I believe that all that stress sort of combined to really help my mom's illness become more apparent, more profound, and just became too much for her to handle all of that stress and sort of keep herself grounded in reality.
And then the stress mm-hmm. of raising children, you know, when you're not at 100%, and then just that combination, that must have been a very, very difficult time. As I look through the book, I see words like confusion, shame, grief, all of those were the kind of trade places from time to time, don't they? Talk about what it's like to try and keep a normal life, going to school, having just, you know, making the appearance of normal, but then knowing that this was at home.
Yeah, it was very challenging for me as a teenager to try to navigate all of that. And one of the most difficult things about it, honestly, was, a combination of a couple of things. One, not quite understanding what was happening to my mom and to my family. We didn't always understand for a while. We really didn't understand what the problem was. And we didn't have other people, you know, kind of helping define for us what was happening and helping us understand. And then because of that, the feeling that we were alone and kind of maybe even the only people who had experienced something like this, because we didn't have we weren't part of a group or a community where people were really talking about their own experiences with mental health. So that feeling of isolation and confusion piled on the sense of shame. And this was something that you shouldn't talk about and you shouldn't share with other people, because for some reason it's just, you know, it's not something that other people want to hear or help you with.
Amy, I think another approach is, well, just maybe throw medication at it and that'll take care of it. And then we can just go about our lives. That's not necessarily true, though. There's more to it than that, isn't there?
There is, although medication, depending on the mental illness, and with an illness like my mom's, with like schizophrenia, medication is typically very important and critical.
Sure.
Those medications are not, you know, they don't just fix the person. They don't necessarily heal the person, and they don't restore the person always to the person they were before these symptoms manifest themselves. So. With my mom, for example, she's been on medications for decades now, and they've helped her tremendously, but they've also caused a lot of side effects that she doesn't like to live with. They're very expensive. They alter a person in their own ways, and so it's not quite as simple to live with those medications necessarily as people might like to think.
We're talking with Amy Simpson this morning, and she has authored a book called Troubled Minds, It's Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. And Amy, when we come back after our quick break here, I would like to transition into some of the research that you've found from talking with pastors and church leaders about what they've got going on in their own congregations. But then also, what can the church do to address this issue? So we'll be back in just a moment with more thoughts on that from Amy Simpson. This is Faith Radio Mornings with Ted and PK.
Far above what I can see, beyond the things I think I need, and I believe you're holding me. Here I wait for you to speak. Far above.
It's Faith Radio Morning, 7:47. This song, Peace Be Still. It's sometimes easier said than done, just being still and soaking in the peace that passes all understanding, especially when you're dealing with tough situations within your family or with loved ones, such as mental illness. And we're talking about this right now with author Amy Simpson. She is the editor of giftedforleadership.com, managing editor for marriage and parenting resources for Today's Christian Woman as well. And she's authored the book Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. And PK, you were asking about the response that we should have as the church.
Yeah, Amy, in some of the research that you've done in talking with pastors, were you surprised by how aware or unaware they were of any mental illness within their congregations? What did you discover?
Well, I discovered, I wasn't surprised necessarily by everything I found, but I was surprised that there was a high level of awareness among church leaders of mental illness. Among the 500 church leaders I surveyed, 98% said they had seen some type of mental illness in their congregation. So there's a high level of awareness, but at the same time, only 12.5% of them said that mental illness is openly discussed in a healthy way in their church. So there's a significant gap there between their awareness of mental illness in their churches and what they feel is, you know, even in according to them, is the degree to which this is dealt with in a healthy way.
Well, and in chapter 8 in the book, you have it titled specifically What Churches Can Do. Can you give us one example of what churches can do to reach out?
Yeah, and in the book, I also profile a few churches who actually are doing something specifically to address mental illness. So there are churches who are, you know, really going after this issue intentionally and trying to make it a core focus of ministry. But even for churches who are not at that point, to be able to do that, there are some very simple things we can do. One is consider the ways that we already serve people who are affected by illness or injury. And, you know, it's surprising in a way, but it's very common for churches to not extend that same kind of practical help to people who are affected by mental illness. For example, a lot of people call mental illness the no casserole illness because you don't necessarily receive the same kinds of meals that are provided for other sick people. People don't always feel comfortable visiting in a psychiatric hospital like they might in another type of hospital setting. So thinking already about what do we already do that we can also do for people affected by mental illness, providing meals, making sure their kids have rides, just going and sitting with someone, just being there, visiting them in the hospital, helping them with the cost of medication. Those kinds of practical helps can go a long way. Another thing is to think about how we respond to people with mental illness, because it's very common for people to feel afraid when confronted with mental illness. Most of that fear is irrational, and it's based in misconceptions that we have about people with mental illness. So to kind of pay attention to those feelings and whether they really make sense. And if it doesn't really make sense for me to be afraid of this person, what's another response that I can give? I can make eye contact with the person. I can smile, say hi, shake their hand, and basically extend the same kind of dignity to them as a person made in God's image that I do to other people around me.
Mm-hmm. And maybe also ministering to those that are in the situation of caregiving for somebody that is mentally ill. They need a break occasionally. That's another way we can come alongside and minister, right?
Absolutely. Families who are caring for someone with mental illness, especially if there, if that mental illness is a serious and chronic issue, or if it's if the person's experiencing acute symptoms, can be very trying for a family. And those families or friends or caregivers definitely need support and someone they can go to and talk to and be real with and kind of relax around. Or like you said, somebody who can come and give them a break is critical.
We're talking with Amy Simpson this morning. Her book is called Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission, and getting some great thoughts about how we can come alongside those with mental illness and those who are also perhaps providing care. I think it was kind of revealing to Amy that you list out some statistics that 1 in 4 adults, a little more than 25% of those 18 and older, suffer from a diagnosable mental disorder. And this is like, you're looking at your coworkers, you're looking at your family, you know, looking at those sitting in church next to you. This touches everybody.
It really does. In fact, you know, we tend to think of, when we think of mental illness, I think largely because of our imagination, which is informed by news media and movies and television. Mm-hmm. You know, we have some misconceptions about mental illness. We tend to think of illnesses like schizophrenia. We tend to think of our homeless population. And these are real people who are affected by mental illness. But there are lots of other people who are also affected by mental illness who are very much in the mainstream of society, who are in our churches, our coworkers, like you said, our friends, people who sit next to us on Sunday morning, who are affected by things like depression and anxiety disorders, eating disorders. So mental illness is much more common than most people realize. In fact, one thing I discovered in doing research for this book was that mental illness is actually more common than diabetes, heart disease, cancer, HIV, and AIDS combined in this country. It's the number one cause of disability in North America. So this is a huge issue, and given the size of the problem, given the number of people who are affected, we just barely talk about it. There's so much more that we can do.
Amy, is that your greatest hope that will come as a result of this book, is that it will be more in our collective conscious?
It is. And I think, you know, my hope really doesn't stop there, because my hope is that, yes, we will talk about this more, but not only talk about it, but talk about it within the church and within the context of Christ's love and grace, and the hope that extends to everyone. I really want people to understand that being diagnosed with a mental illness does not mean your life is over. It doesn't mean you no longer have a purpose or you're no longer part of God's plan. I want people to understand that there is great hope for those affected by mental illness, not only medically speaking, but also spiritually speaking. We have great hope in this life. We have great hope for the future life. And we can extend that as the church. We can extend that kind of hope to everyone around us. So, yeah, I do hope that we will talk about it more. We'll be more aware, but not just for the sake of being more aware, but for the sake of extending that kind of hope.
And I think this is a good reminder, too, to also encourage our church leaders, because many of them in the research that you were doing said that they had gone through like some, even a mood disorder like depression or bipolar or something. And we always look to our leaders as being untouchable, but they are also right there with us, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. A large number of church leaders indicated that they had gone through something themselves. And I think, for example, 23% of church leaders indicated they had suffered from an anxiety disorder, and 38.7% from a mood disorder like depression. Often church leaders, not only with issues like mental illness, but with other problems in their lives as well, don't really have anyone they can talk to. So, church leaders need to first sort of come to terms with their own struggles and find someone safe they can talk to, maybe see a counselor or, you know, find treatment themselves, and then they'll be in a better place to minister to other people.
I thought this would be great to talk about this, because May is Mental Health Awareness Month, too. So this is just something that we want to make sure that it's also addressed within the church instead of just kind of kept quiet. And my husband and I have been in church settings before. He was pastoring for many years where many of the congregation members were on meds and that sort of thing. And I can tell you that a lot of those people were just left alone or isolated because people didn't know how to relate to them. And it was just like, well, there's something different there. I'm not sure. So I appreciate how you're just talking about making eye contact and just sitting and chatting with people from time to time and just loving them as brothers and sisters in Christ. How would you encourage people today?
I would encourage people to remember that even though mental illness feels intimidating, it feels like something most of us aren't qualified to deal with. And that's true. Most of us are not qualified to treat a mental illness, but most of us are also not qualified to reset a broken bone or, treat someone's diabetes or help someone with cancer treatment. But we aren't intimidated in the same way by those illnesses because there's that, you know, that those things don't carry that same kind of stigma that mental illness does. So I would encourage people to sort of face their own fears about mental illness and remember that even though we're not necessarily qualified to help treat mental illness, we are all qualified to be a Christ-like friend, a loving person, someone who can come alongside and just be a part of life with people who are struggling.
Some great words. So just take a deep breath, walk across the room, and break that ice and see what God does. That's a good word for us today. Amy, thank you so much for taking time with us. And we appreciate this book, Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission is the title of this. And we'll have it linked up at myfaithradio.com. Blessings to you, Amy. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.